Okay, and the last speaker of this group is Dr. Michael Piacentini with the topic keratoretinitis in a child.
I would like to once again to thank Miguel for the kind invitation to be here today, and it's a pleasure to be with you all. This afternoon, I'd like to present, probably the most interesting case I've encountered clinically over the last 10 years. Excuse me if there's not a lot of pathology directly here. It's tough to follow someone like Maria, but hopefully some clinical relevance or interest. It's that of a keratoretinitis in a child, and I practice in Manchester, Massachusetts, which is about 30 minutes north of Boston. Here's a few years ago. Miguel and I go back. It's my first ARVO. So I showed this picture to my six-year-old son this past week, and he's been making fun of me all week with these eyeglasses. So but we haven't changed, Miguel. So the history is that of an 11-year-old boy who presented to our practice over two years ago with right eye ocular redness and foreign body sensation of 3 weeks duration at that point. There was no previous ocular history other than myopia, no trauma, not a contact lens wear, and he was a systemically well and healthy boy. At that point, the exam showed excellent corrected vision, a focal punctate epithelial keratitis in the right eye with contiguous stromal haze. There was no intraocular inflammation, no anterior posterior segment inflammation. At that point, my partner treated him with a 7-day course of tobramycin and dexamethasone for presumed EKC. The follow-up, he did require a reasonable course of topical anti-inflammatory, a 4-week course of Lodamax with essential resolution of his symptoms, some mild punctate peripheral subepithelial corneal scarring outside of the visual axis, and excellent corrected vision. So at that point, we thought he was home free, but he presented to us, to me, 10 months later with reoccurrence of ocular irritation and foreign body sensation in the right eye. Once again, corrected vision is excellent. At this point, he had more diffuse, scattered focal subepithelial keratitis in the right eye with deeper stromal and endothelial involvement. And at this point, there were linear opacities extending throughout the stroma and some posteriorly all the way to the endothelium. And posteriorly in the eye, there was evidence of a peripheral choroidal retinal lesions, several of which on contact lens exam had these linear opacities in them as well. I don't seem to have a pointer here, but here you can see the clinical pictures of the anterior segment. The eye is white and quiet. Thank you, sir. So the eye is essentially white and quiet. It's pharmacologically dilated. And in the unslit length exam, you can see focal posterior inflammation of the cornea. You can appreciate these linear opacities in the cornea, hopefully here on the slide left, these linear opacities that actually extended deep into the stroma to the endothelium. The posterior segment showed essentially there was no significant vitritis, a healthy optic nerve, no vasculitis evident, but he did have these focal peripheral choroidal retinal lesions. And with contact lens exam, we could appreciate in several of these linear opacities that were similar to the ones in the cornea findings. So at this point, we were sort of a bit of a diagnostic dilemma. And we had a couple people actually look at him as well. And certainly presenting atypically for an infectious process with essentially a white eye with no significant discharge, be it typical for bacterial, fungal, or herpetic. Once again, atypical for a degenerative or dystrophy process is unilateral and posterior segment findings. And really the question remained, was there any foreign body exposure in this young man? And upon further questioning, this young boy told us that indeed he had, prior to his initial presentation, been exposed to a friend's pet tarantula. And he had handled the tarantula on one occasion. And indeed, all this came together with when we had multiple people discuss this in case, that these actually opacities in the cornea, stroma and endothelium and retinal findings were actually these hairs, these barbed hairs. And on sort of pursuing, doing a little investigation on these, we found out that the tarantulas notoriously, when provoked, rub their legs on their hindquarters and spray these hairs. And the hairs are actually, on EM, they are almost like daggers. They are very sharp and barbed, so they can penetrate through tissue and embed into tissue and stay in tissue. So the presumed mechanism was that these hairs had actually penetrated through the ocular tissue anteriorly and migrated posteriorly to the peripheral retina. He received a 4 to 6 week course of topical steroid, and if he had not responded at that point, we were contemplating giving him an oral course of corticosteroids. But thankfully, he's had resolution of his symptoms, and I saw him for a full exam approximately a month ago and did a complete contact lens exam on him, and we looked hard, and I couldn't find any of these opacities evident. So, of course, we thought we had found something new, and then going to the literature, looking this up, this has been described over 100 years ago, ophthalmia nodosa, and first described by someone named Simish to describe granulomatous nodules on the conjunctiva and iris in response to caterpillar hairs. It's now used to describe various ocular reactions to insect and vegetable hairs. And so indeed, most of our children won't be exposed to tarantulas, but caterpillars are regularly handled. And indeed, the more we investigated this, the more we realized that these potentially could be more of the culprits. Ophthalmia nodosa has been classified with 5 reaction types, and this original description was to the caterpillar hairs, an acute toxic reaction, a chronic mechanical keratoconjunctivitis secondary to retained foreign bodies, conjunctiva and subconjunctival nodules and intracorneal hairs, and iritis with or without nodules, and even vitritis with or without macular edema and papillitis. And these have led to secondary cataracts and glaucoma, which have required vitrectomy. A bit about tarantulas for those contemplating acquiring those as pets. They're the largest and hairiest of spiders, naturally occurring in tropical climates belonging to the Theraphosidae family. Increasing attraction as pets because they can live up to 20 years of age. All are venomous. The Chilean rose tarantulas with less potent venom are popular as pets because of their large size and color. And their defenses include painful bites with fangs, and equally important, the spraying of these barbed urticating hairs causing respiratory, dermatologic, and ocular reactions. The treatment involves, if possible, removing these offending hairs, if possible, on presentation. Topical or systemic anti-inflammatory medications, including steroids, surgery for secondary cataract or chronic vitritis, and prevention. That's really the sort of the take-home message I took away from this case with my children. Handling of pet spiders, which they don't do, or caterpillars, requires protective goggles and gloves. A bibliography for those interested. And if you can appease me, I just want to walk down memory lane a little bit. When I came up here for my fellowship in 1998 now with Miguel, I spent time in Miguel's lab and had a wonderful year with doing oculoplastics fellowship training with Brian Arthur, who's a superb clinician and individual. I'm happy to be here today. A happy reunion in Montreal several years ago with my son. This is several years ago now. And a visit by Miguel to Boston over 6 years ago now with my Julia, Claire Julia. So thank you all.
Any question or comment? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We have a break?
Yeah.
Okay.
Coffee break will be back in precisely 30 minutes. And by the way, congratulations to all of you. We are 4 minutes ahead of schedule.